just because you haven't gotten into the juniors that have already gone up like 50 or 75%, don't beat yourself up about that, because there's plenty of opportunities out there. Just still do your research. I mean, you can still find things that haven't moved, but really will move once gold makes that breakout.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by Orin Resources. Orin is a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major, focused on finding the next globally significant discovery to create enormous potential upside for shareholders. It's one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits, and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. With Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management with a history of success and advanced and monetizing exploration assets, Orin has been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and NYSE under the ticker AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYN resources.com. You are listening to Mining Stock Education. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Bill Powers, your host. Well, today I'm joined by Jordan Roiburn of thedailygold.com. If you follow the gold market and you go on the internet, you've been, I'm sure, exposed to Jordan's commentary, which he puts out once a week. I post it on my website. Jordan also has subscription service regarding timing the gold market, and he shares via his subscription service some of the stocks that he invests in. I asked him to come on the show today to talk about the gold market, where he sees gold going, and to share with us his approach to junior mining stock investing. So Jordan, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It's a real pleasure.
Well, I appreciated your commentary last year in 2018. You know, as a perma bull, those that invest in these gold stocks, we want to see gold go up because then our equities go up. And last year, over the course of the year, you were really conservative. In fact, you said, if I recall correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, that basically towards the end of 2018 would be the earliest that you would see gold rising steeply. And you were saying that from the beginning of 2018. So I say that to say I appreciate your conservative approach, even as someone that wants to see gold rise in price and believes there's fundamental reasons for a rising gold price. You at the same time try to be realistic. So with that being said, what do you see now, Jordan? We're a few months in, or more than a few months into, a rising gold price. Some people I've talked to recently in private conversation said it just feels like it's different, like we're going to continue to trend upward. What are you seeing right now?
Well, I do have to say that, you know, over the last couple of years, I've probably been too conservative at times. And I think if we're looking at, you know, we can look at fundamentals and technicals separately. And so fundamentals over the last year, I've been making the case that basically a shift in Fed policy is what will get this market going. And, you know, we haven't seen the full shift yet, but it appears we have seen the Fed move to a pause. And so what I was saying in 2018 is, you know, the sector will bottom, you know, after the last rate hike. And it's possible that December is the last rate hike. It's just, it's difficult. So we don't know. And looking at history, I mean, obviously negative real rates and falling real interest rates are really the biggest driver for precious metals moving higher. And so that means you either have an acceleration in inflation or you have the Fed cutting rates. Like, those are the catalysts, basically. So I think, you know, this, at least this time where we are here and now, it's more likely to be the Fed cutting rates. And it's really when they make that first rate cut, it's right before that when the market really gets going. And looking at how precious metals have performed, I mean, they've performed pretty well before that December bottom, if it was the last cut, and after that December bottom. And so it's really interesting to me because technically we've seen a lot of good things, but we haven't quite seen enough to say this is a bull market. I mean, we're still, there's still a few things that are lacking. Breadth indicators as far as, you know, how many stocks are, you know, how much of the sector is participating, you know, how much of the sector is above the 200-day moving average. We've seen really good readings, but not quite at the levels where you say, okay, that's clearly a bull market. And so that's where we are here and now in the very short term. It's actually very interesting. It looks like over the last couple of weeks, you know, the gold stocks are kind of doing a bullish consolidation here. And it's possible that if, you know, we get another leg higher here, we could see gold go up and test that wall of resistance around 1350, 1360. The miners could pop a little bit more, and I'm anxious to see, if we get that move higher, some of the indicators that I look at, are those going to reach bull market territory? I mean, I do think if gold gets up to the 1350, 1360 level again, I mean, I do think that's a really good sign, because it will have gotten up to that level a handful of times over the last 2 or 3 years. It's just the more times you get up to it, the more likely you're going to break. So, I'm actually pretty encouraged with where we are. And so that the fact that we're not quite in a bull market yet, at least in a confirmed bull market yet, that kind of fits with the fundamentals, where, the Fed is pausing, which is good. That's already priced in. But is the Fed going to move from a pause to a cut? I mean, it's possible later in the year. I mean, I think the market's predicting a cut in early 2020. So basically, fundamentals and technicals are saying, we're not quite in a bull market yet, but we're really close. And the last thing on that, I should say, well, two things. Number one, when we do get in a confirmed bull market, obviously prices are going to be higher. So you can't just wait for that confirmation and assume that, prices are still going to be at these levels. When we do get confirmation, prices will obviously be higher. The last thing is I'm really watching gold against the S&P 500, gold against the stock market, because gold has never been in a real bull market, in a real lasting bull market, without strongly outperforming the stock market. The only caveat to that is you could go back to 1985 to 1987, when the dollar actually fell 50%. I think gold went up 70%. So we did have a bull market then, but at precious metals then, they didn't really outperform the S&P 500. So that's the only, example that, the only non-example I could say of, gold being in a at least a cyclical bull market and not outperforming the stock market at the same time. So gold against the stock market ratio, I am watching that every day. I'm watching that super closely, because I think that, assuming that we are going to get a bull market and gold's going to have a big breakout, that the last catalyst for that, I think, is really going to be gold outperforming the stock market. And it fits together, because if the stock market gets weak and rolls over, gold's going to be outperforming the stock market. And, it probably has a negative economic message. And what's the Fed going to do at that point? They're probably going to look to rate cuts. So I know that's a long answer, but that's basically how I see the market where we are here and now. I mean, things are looking better and better. We're not quite confirmed bull market yet, but who knows? I think we're going to be there before the end of the year, but maybe it'll only be a couple months. We'll see.
When you look at the gold stocks, what do you think they're telegraphing about the price of gold this year?
Nothing.
Are there
I don't
any
think
clear
they're.
signals?
I mean, it's a good question. We're not seeing. One thing I want to look for is seeing, at least in the short term, is seeing, are the gold stocks showing more strength than gold? And, I think on a very short term basis, they are. I mean, if we look at the correction over the last couple weeks, I'm just pulling up some short term charts. I mean, we have had this move over the last couple months, and we've kind of been correcting since the very end of January, but we're holding those gains. So we're correcting in a very bullish fashion. And so, I mean, as far as the whole year, Bill, it's hard to say, because, the miners obviously are going to lead. They're going to discount things in advance. And so I think that if we, one thing we should look for is if we see the miners really outperforming gold and showing a lot of relative strength before gold gets up or breaks that wall of resistance around 1360, that would be a really encouraging sign. And look, if and when the market takes out that 1350, 1360 level, I mean, there's a measured upside move to 1700. Gold has basically, gold doesn't really have a lot of resistance until 1500, 1550. So there is a lot of room to run if we get this big breakout. And the same thing for the stocks. They've made these massive bottoming patterns over the last 6 or 7 years. And GDXJ, for example, if it breaks out of its bottoming pattern, it has a measured upside target of like 80 or 82. I think GDX has an measured upside target of close to 50, or maybe it's 50. So, I mean, that's really the big key. I think if and when we get this big breakout in the sector, I mean, obviously you're going to see a lot of money being made. You're going to see huge moves. And we're just in, we're in the period before that right now, where we're kind of waiting. And, like you said, I mean, is there any signal that's telling us it's going to come immediately or later. I mean, it's hard to say, but I do have to say over the last week or so, I mean, the gold stocks are, they are showing a little bit more strength relative to gold, and that's a good sign. I would like to see, I mean, silver is kind of underperforming gold a little bit. I would like to see that strengthen, but I really think that, you know, if, again, if and when we see gold make this massive breakout through that wall of resistance, I think that's going to be the point when you see silver in the entire junior sector really start to outperform.
When you go back and look at how you analyze the bottom in gold that occurred in December 2015, January 16, how accurate were you back then? And then early in 16, when did, with your analysis, did you get that technical confirmation that you were in a strong upswing?
That's a very good question. I'm watching more breadth indicators this time around because I think in late December, at least leading into 2016, I was thinking we're probably going to see more dollar strength and we're going to see precious metals move lower and then they're going to make this huge bottom around the summer. So, you know, I'm always kind of a little I'm too conservative, so I'm kind of a little late to these bottoms. And, you know, once gold, I think, I want to say in February, I started buying more things aggressively. And I think when gold went through its 80-week moving average, which is also equivalent to the 400-day moving average, I use that in my work quite a bit, along with the 200-day. At that point, that's when I started buying aggressively, getting up to fully invested. So I did wait. I didn't anticipate it. And it's interesting because I remember in November, like there were a couple stocks that I just thought, geez, these are like, these are super cheap. I should just buy them anyway. Because as a technical analyst, one problem I have, especially in this sector, is I get obsessed with trying to pick the exact bottom or just buy the low. When if you're looking at something and you just think, what, you know, this is extremely cheap, it should just, you know, it kind of, being a technical analyst, it prevents me from buying something that's an extremely good value. Like I remember in November 2015, like Pure Gold, for example, and Bear Creek Mining were just super cheap. Like Pure Gold was, it was like at 7 or 8 cents. And I mean, that stock is, I think it's like 70 cents today. So, and it made a huge move in 2016. So I did not buy those, unfortunately. So around, you know, when these exact bottoms are being made, I tend to be too conservative. I mean, if it's looking more and more likely, like the bottom in November or December, whenever it was at the end of last year. I mean, I was too conservative around that bottom. I wasn't trusting my indicators. Breadth indicators were really weak, but they were showing that the market was really oversold, especially with respect to GDXJ. So, it's extremely difficult for anyone to pick the bottom. And it's also at that point, like fundamental investing and value investing and just being able to identify really good values, that's going to actually serve you better than trying to pick the exact bottom as a technical analyst, especially in the junior sector. But one last thing I will mention is the nice thing about this sector is the junior sector as a whole tends to really lag. And so, excuse me, one thing I remember, it's interesting because going back to like the 2008 low, I mean, there were some juniors that really didn't start to move until like the spring of 2009. So that was 4, 5, 6 months after that low. And even in 2016, I mean, the same thing. We had that bottom in January, but there were some stocks that really didn't start moving until April, May, June. And so the nice thing is you can actually wait for the bottom to be confirmed, and you're still going to find some value in the junior sector. You don't have to chase everything that's already jumped 50 or 70%. Like there's things that you can buy that haven't moved yet that will move. So that's the nice thing about the junior sector. And I mean, assuming that's the case again, a lot of these things that haven't moved, I mean, if we see gold make that major breakout this year, those things that haven't moved, they're going to move really fast. They're going to jump like 50% or 70% in a couple weeks. They could double in like, you know, a month and a half. So, you know, that with picking bottoms, that's one thing that people should remember. Just because you haven't gotten into the juniors that have already gone up like 50 or 75%, don't beat yourself up about that because there's plenty of opportunities out there. Just still do your research I mean, you could still find things that haven't moved, but really will move once gold makes that breakout.
This episode of MiningStockEducation.com is brought to you by Sandstorm Gold Royalties. Sandstorm Gold Royalties is a different kind of gold company. They purchase royalties on select mining operations and receive a percentage of the revenue in return. Sandstorm now has a portfolio of nearly 190 gold royalties around the world. See how gold royalties differ from other gold mining investments at SandstormGold.com. That's SandstormGold.com. Sandstorm Gold Royalties trades on the TSX as SSL and on the NYSE American as SAND. That's a good segue into you sharing your approach to junior mining investing and what you look for in a company. You go to the conferences. I met you briefly last year at the Sprott conference, but you attend numerous conferences. You meet with management face to face. When you're looking at a junior mining investment, what does the ideal investment look like for you?
The ideal investment, I will say this. When I started out investing in this sector in the early 2000s, I was more into looking at the junior producers. And, you know, we had strong metals prices. They were consistently rising. Other than that crash in 2008, I mean, they basically were consistently rising every year. And so that was really conducive to junior producers that were able to grow their production. And I mean, there was a group of silver juniors. I mean, they're much bigger now, but I really liked investing in those. And same on the gold side. So, you know, as I got started investing in this industry, I started out on the producer side. And given the consistent rises in gold and silver prices, that made investing in producers that much easier because they were able to grow their production. I mean, financing was easier because metals prices were always rising. But I mean, in the last couple of years, I've learned to invest more in the explorers and the exploration side because the overall fundamentals of the industry, which I'm sure you've talked about on your show and guests have talked about, you know, the majors can't grow production. I mean, their reserve bases, I mean, their production profiles are going to be falling off a cliff over the next 5 or 10 years. So they have to replace reserves. I mean, if you're not replacing reserves, you're literally dying in this business. So that and that's why we see, you know, if it looks like a junior has made a real discovery, I mean, the stock can make a massive move higher in a short amount of time. So now, I mean, the real juicy fundamentals are for the exploration companies that can make a discovery, you know, find an economic deposit, grow it, add value to it. That's where the money is flowing. And so on the exploration side, what I'm really looking for, it's simple. I'm looking for obviously small companies, but something that has, they've already identified something or they have some value, so they have some backstop that I guess limits their downside. But at the same time, they have you know, a huge amount of exploration upside to go with that. I mean, I realize it's kind of a tough set of criteria. I mean, there's not going to be 100 or 50 companies out there that fit this criteria. But I mean, to me, that's really the sweet spot. If you can find something that they've already defined some value, it gives them a backstop, but they're small enough where the stock hasn't, you know, it hasn't already gone up like 5 or 10 fold. And, but with that, they, with what they've already found, you know, they have a huge amount of potential to, you know, grow what they've already found, or maybe they can discover something else on their project. And so to me, that's really the sweet spot because I prefer to be in something like that rather than something that's like a 5 cent stock and they don't have any backstop. And so if they drill and they miss it, it's, you know, you can't, I mean, it's basically almost at that point, it's a lot more of a gamble. So that's what I look for in explorers. I mean, obviously you want to look for things that have a good capital structure. They have cash. They have a tight share structure. They have a good retail float. I want to be, you know, with management teams that and geologists that, you know, they don't necessarily have to have a track record. I mean, it's great if they have a track record, but they at least know what they're doing. And I mean, the retail float, I just mentioned that. I mean, that's important because if they have a tighter retail float, the stock is going to be able to have an easier time rising. And you know, and I want to look for stuff that have good enough upside. I'm not just looking for 50% or 100%. I mean, depending on the company, if we're looking at small juniors, you know, I want to look at something that has 3 or 5x potential. Now, on the producer side, obviously you want to look for things that have the ability to grow. But right now, it's very interesting because companies that are producing, but they're doing a lot of exploration, like if they make a discovery, they can get the same benefit to their stock as you see in the junior exploration companies. Like Kirkland Lake is the gold standard of an example. They made this.
Wesdome.
Yeah. And I actually own Wesdome. I was going to mention that because that's one of my favorite stocks. I was not going to mention Wesdome by name. I was going to say there's actually one that's a little bit, it's like a poor man's Kirkland Lake, but that is Wesdome. If you can find, I mean, if you're looking for producers, that's what you want to find. Junior producers that have, they have some exploration potential, and if they can make a discovery, I mean that is a game changer for those companies as well. So, that's really what I'm looking at on the producer side. And Bill, things are going to get a lot more interesting if we do get this big breakout in the sector because, money is going to be flowing into everything. So even like optionality plays, they have not been sexy the last couple of years, but optionality plays. They could, if we see this big move in metals prices, optionality plays are going to do extremely well.
Jordan, when I was at Beaver Creek, I met with a management team. I believe it was 18 million ounces of gold they have in Mexico, and they're just sitting there, and I can't remember how many million. It could have been 10 million or more dollars in the bank. And I asked them, "What are you guys doing next year?" And they're like, "Waiting for the gold price to rise." So there they are with all this cash in the bank, 18 million ounces of gold in the ground, and they're just waiting.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably more than a few companies like that, and there's one that I follow. I'm not going to mention the name, but like it's moved quite a bit in the last couple months. But yeah, I mean, look, everything as long as they have some gold or silver, like then it's an optionality play. So a lot of these companies, or let me go back for a second. Almost every company is an optionality play in a sense. I mean, even these hotshot exploration companies. If metals prices go up, I mean, that's good for them. It's good for everybody, obviously. So I'm just saying there's probably a lot of value to be found on the optionality side, especially in the companies that have not moved yet. Those companies they could really move if we get this big breakout in the gold price. And I'm a little bit more interested in silver now because silver has not, it hasn't really moved yet. Silver's bear market was worse than even the gold stocks. I mean, silver a couple months ago when it bottomed, it basically came down to its, I mean, very close to its 2015, 2016 low. And if we do see, like I said earlier, if we do see this huge breakout in gold, I mean, that's when silver is really going to take off. So I'm, as far as optionality, I'm getting more interested on the silver side. And I mean, the silver business, a lot of silver companies have basically had to leave silver. They've had to change their name. So it's really hard to find, tiny silver optionality plays. But I mean, that's another thing to keep an eye on if you've missed the move over the last couple of months is look at silver. I mean, because silver is going to outperform once things really get going. So that also has me excited.
In terms of where you look for mining investments jurisdiction-wise, where do you focus on?
I would probably say Canada and Mexico. That's the short answer. The long answer is,
You avoid your own home country, the US?
not necessarily. I'm not, I think jurisdiction is kind of, I think most people probably place too much emphasis on it because I think we know given where the industry is, where it's badly in need of economic deposits, if you find a high margin economic deposit and it's in a jurisdiction that's supposedly not that great, I mean, that's still going to have a lot of value. I mean, look what happened with Mariana Resources. I mean, in Turkey, that's not exactly the best country to be in, but I mean, that stock did fantastically well on that discovery. So I shouldn't say many, but there's some examples like that. If you find a really good deposit and it can make a decent amount of money at 1100 or 1200 gold, that's going to have value. I mean, that even if you're in places in Africa, I mean, obviously, you have to know the ins and outs of where you are exactly and the political situation there, and those things can always change every couple of years. So you have to keep on top of those. But I'm not, you know, I'm more, for me, I'm more looking for, you know, where can I find, you know, economic deposits or exploration potential? That's what I'm looking for. And then, you know, jurisdiction is kind of a second point. You know, you obviously don't want to be in Russia or any of the Stan countries. But, you know, other than that, I'm pretty much open to anywhere as long as there's potential for an economic deposit. And what, you know, when you're in those unfavorable jurisdictions, that like those things are going to be cheaper. I mean, they're going to be cheaper than like if you just have a piece of moose pasture in, you know, Canada or Nevada. So that doesn't, you know, that doesn't really excite me. Exploration potential is what excites me, I guess, more than being in a safe jurisdiction, because you know, it's much harder to find, you know, find the deposit, I guess.
What's your thoughts on the junior mining sector and financing right now? I observed, I mentioned this to you pre-call, a recent junior miner that had to give away a full warrant for each share in a private placement that they were doing to raise money. And then on the flip side, there's companies like Great Bear Resources that have discoveries where they're able to raise money at will, seemingly. What are some of your observations of what's going on?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, I have you know, I have a few private placements, and I was checking in on them yesterday. And the financing market, I guess, for you know, private stuff has really dried up. I mean, there's nothing there, and people are just looking. You know, they're looking to, I guess, random big money retail investors. So I mean, that it's very interesting to me. I would have thought that, you know, gold making this recovery and holding above 1300 for the time being, I thought that would get more people excited, but it really hasn't. So, I mean, if you're buying, you know, you're buying into placements of private companies, I mean, that looks like, you know, those companies are having trouble raising a lot of money. And there is one company I own. I won't mention the name, but you know, they were working on getting some big names into, you know, they're going to have an upcoming financing, and they're working on getting some big names into it. And it sounds like the big names are going to put in like about 10% of maybe what, you know, what the company was hoping for. And, you know, and I said, you know, why? What's the issue here? And I guess a lot of the big names, you know, they went big into things in 2016 and got burned. So they're still gun shy where they're, you know, and we're talking about real whales here. So they're, you know, they're not putting in that much money now. So it's interesting reflection on the sentiment of the sector. I mean, we're not like a breakout is not imminent, but you know, looking at where the technicals are, I mean, we very well could rally up to 1350, 1360 again. And it's just interesting because it seems like that, you know, the financing conditions are still going to be tough until we get that big breakout. And that, I mean, that really surprises me. You know, with respect to companies that are already public, I mean, giving away a full warrant, I mean, that's not the end of the world as long as, you know, it's not like a 5-year warrant. I mean, if it's a 2-year warrant,
It was a
or
2-year warrant, I believe.
yeah, I mean, I guess a 2-year warrant is not that, you know, it's not that bad. And I guess if the price is high enough, you know, the strike price on the warrant is high enough, it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, I mean, it just speaks to it's a very difficult time to finance. And look, I mean, obviously, if you have a great discovery like Great Bear and things just keep getting better, you know, your people are going to be throwing money at you left and right. So, but if you're not in that situation, it definitely is difficult to finance. And so there's a lot of especially for the people who like to buy private placements in companies before they go public. There's a huge amount of opportunity there right now.
Yes, a lot of excellent advice you've shared with us today. Jordan's website is thedailygold.com. There you can go. Jordan has a free email list, which I'm on, and he'll email you once a week his interviews and the articles that he posts. And there you can also learn more about his paid-for subscription service. Jordan, as we conclude, any thoughts you'd like to share in light of what we've spoken about?
I think We've covered everything, Bill. Actually, I have nothing else to say because I think I've said it all. I just say thank you, Bill, for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. I appreciated the conversation and I look forward to catching up with you more often. For millennia, ancient pharaohs prospered from unparalleled riches made possible by Egypt's resource-rich gold deposits. But despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world. But that's all about to change. Aton Resources is leading the charge on the Egyptian mining revival. As the only public exploration company in Egypt, Aton Resources has first mover advantage. Focused on their 100% owned Abu Marawat concession, Aton Resources is advancing several exploration targets, including the recent discovery of the legendary Lost Mountain of Gold at Rod Ruin. Learn more about this exciting drill program and other news at atonresources.com. Aton trades on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF. Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.